All righty. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Friday edition just ahead of the weekend. And another long and grueling week for me. I was out for all of this week and part of last week leading a group of WGN listeners on a tour of Ireland. We had another great time, a great group of people. And I just got a note from Dave Marzullo, who takes care of the web. They just posted some of the pictures there. So if you want to check it out, check out WGNradio.com. It's great to be back, but boy, was it fun while we were there. And look forward to the next trip to Iceland just a few weeks from now. Okay, a lot on the program today, and I want to jump right in it because there's a really cool thing going on at Northwestern University, and it's one that I'm not sure I completely understand. Gal Bendor is on a phone line to explain it to me. Gal, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much.
All right, let's just start from the basics. This is a make-a-thon. You are the event chair, and the name of your – tell me the name of your group because I don't want to mispronounce it.
Yeah, so this is a make-a-thon. It's a Northwestern make-a-thon, and it's inspired by TOM, which is Tikkun Olam Makers. It's a community that basically a global community that's connecting people with disabilities with makers, which are designers, innovators, developers, engineers, and anyone that wants to really like build something.
All right, so I've heard of.
And to have,
I'm sorry. Go,
yeah,
ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I have heard about these events, you know, where it's almost like a reality show or a game show or something like that, but with real benefits, and it's a great sort of innovation exercise, this make-a-thon, where there are these teams. They started, what, at 9 o'clock this morning, and they've got through the weekend to solve problems, right? They're presented with very specific problems. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we have five need-knowers, which are basically people with a disability that have a challenge that they face in their day-to-day life. And each group got her need-knower and that challenge, and they are working throughout the weekend to solve these problems. And on Sunday evening, we'll actually have five different products for these people to go home with and help them solve these challenges.
Did the teams know the problems before they started today?
We had a kickoff in which the teams met the need-knowers. Each and every one of them has their unique story, and they met together and started ideating, but today they're starting to build the actual products.
Well, you referred to the projects as, or the people behind the projects as need-knowers. Tell me who they are and what those needs are.
Sure. So I can tell you, for example, about Zane, who's a six-year-old boy that actually his left hand is three fingers, and including a thumb and index finger, and his right hand has two fingers. And he basically wants to play baseball but cannot today have a regular baseball glove, and it's also really hard for him to hold things. So he's coming into this make-a-thon, and his group is responsible to find a way to bridge that challenge and basically have him play baseball and maybe grab stuff. So they're thinking, for example, to a 3D print sort of extension to his hand.
And they're not sitting around thinking and drawing things. They're making. This is a make-a-thon where they hope to have a glove or a mitt that this young boy can wear on Sunday evening.
Yes, that's correct.
Another of the projects is a woman who is blind who wants to figure out which car on her street is her Uber ride. And how would they come about that?
Yeah, so for her, the challenge is that she feels vulnerable if she will tell the driver that she's blind. So she wants some other way to do it. And we have a really great team of really smart and bright engineers that are working on the Uber API and basically having some kind of voice recognition that would recognize that her car has arrived and will let her know and direct her to the right car.
Are these teams made up of Northwestern students, or are they people from all over the area? Who are the makers who are working on that this weekend?
Yeah, so most of our makers are Northwestern University students, and then some of them are also external people that saw the event and asked to join. So we have a total of 30 participants, 30 makers, working on five different challenges.
And so the makers sign up, and then they're assigned a team in one way or another.
Yes, yes.
And they come with their tools? Are there tools provided? What do they walk into, or what did they walk into at 9 o'clock this morning when they got started?
So basically, we have a really amazing shop floor with machinery and tools at the engineering school here at Northwestern. And this is a partnership across Northwestern. So the engineering school is hosting us in their shop floor. They have an electronic lab, so a mechatronics lab, the way that they call it. And there's a lot of machinery here that they can use. They also brought up, some of them are bringing their own machinery from home. So everyone, you know, whatever they feel comfortable working with. The idea is that doesn't matter the device, doesn't matter the machinery, by the end of Sunday, they're going to have solutions.
All right. I'm going to be really happy for this little boy if he's able to catch a baseball with a new glove, and certainly happy for this woman if she's able to get into her Uber car on her street.
Yeah.
But the point also is that this moves beyond, right? You're helping those two people and the three other projects, but the idea is that with these make-a-thons come kernels of innovation that can be used in a wider area. I'm assuming, right? That's the goal here.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve, that's exactly right. So Guy and I are leading this event for Northwestern with these five challenges, but this is basically a part of a global movement, as I mentioned. So there have been more than 20 make-a-thons worldwide. And all the products and the solutions that we're building these make-a-thons are documented and are online with an open IP for everyone that has any disability or a certain challenge to look for and to build. So we have the teams are going to document their bill of materials, the way that they built each and every product. And if somebody in Argentina, for example, has the same problem, like Zane, that wants to be able to catch a ball, then he can also build the same exact solution or to tweak it and to make sure that it fits their own needs.
All right. Sunday afternoon, when this is done, is there a website or a place where people can go and see the results, see what happened over the weekend?
Yes. So there is our website. www.makeathonnyu.tomglobal.org. But you can also come. The closing ceremony is open to the wider public if you want to come. It's in Kellogg School of Management, the Global Hub, the new building in Northwestern University in the new Design Week at this Sunday, so April 30th, and at 6:30.
Up in Evanston.
And the teams in Evanston. And the teams will be presenting their products and with the need knowers, and there's going to be judges and prizes for the most innovative and the best design.
Well, that sounds
so
exciting.
It's going to be really exciting.
Hope you got a great weekend ahead of you. Gal Bendor of this Make-A-Thon up at Northwestern. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
You bet. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We'll talk corporate culture and the poisonous atmosphere coming up. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand in on this Friday. So what do you feel about the extension of Route 53 up through Lake County? I guess the Illinois Economic Policy Institute out with a study that says most of us think it's a great idea. We'll talk about that in the second half hour. But right now, Tom Gimbel, the CEO, the man behind the LaSalle Network, is in the studio. Tom, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
I'm all for the extension of Route 53. I live in the northern suburbs.
What about losing all that beautiful farmland, the prairie, the idyllic way of life? There in Gray's Lake.
There's a lot of shopping malls that used to be farms, too, but people, you get used to it.
We'll see, because they've been talking about it forever, and we'll kick that around a little bit later. And people have talked so much about United. I just got in yesterday from Ireland, right? And so I was on, actually, Aer Lingus, which was wonderful.
And you were the only one with your seat, I assume. No one.
I was the only one with my seat. To their dismay, I think the plane was only about two-thirds full. So we were able to spread out, which is awful.
Which
nice
is part
well.
Of the problem, right?
Yeah, it is. And so we landed. I turned off my airplane mode on my phone, started getting emails and notifications. And it was at that moment that the attorneys for this Dr. Dow announced the settlement with United Airlines. Now, Oscar Munoz is heading to Washington, I think Kim said, next week before a couple of committees to talk about that. You know, it's been a terrible couple of weeks for them. For me, the biggest surprise about all this is that it's this guy who's had the trouble, because he kind of came in.
He was the nice guy.
And he's really made a change in their culture.
He cleaned up, right? When Smyzik was there and the problems they had with the other airports and some of the quote-unquote scandals. And they brought
The Port Authority, yep. Right? There was all of that.
And they bought Munoz in, and he was really helping fix things. What I believe it is, more than anything else, is the culture that already is the perception of the organization, right? So people, the public, the consumers don't love United Airlines.
Okay.
Right? Whether it's delays or what have you. If you follow them on Twitter and people complain about it, there's issues there. Let me give you a different
scenario. Who's going to tweet positive things about an airline?
Well, let me give you a different scenario. The Cubs, which are the greatest story in the world, right? And everybody loves going to Wrigley Field. If two people had a seat in Wrigley Field and the person wouldn't leave and they brought the police came down and the person still wouldn't leave and they carried him off, would people say the Cubs are a terrible organization, that Tom Ricketts has to go?
Probably not.
It's
an excellent point.
Right? So, you know, success cures a lot of ills. It wouldn't happen at Southwest Airlines. I don't think it would be as big of a deal as it is at United. So there are some issues beyond the actual issue.
So it's what you've got coming in a way.
I think so. You got emotion. You know, it's the emotional bank account, right? And the emotional bank account for United Airlines is very low to begin with. So you can't do a withdrawal like this and expect everyone to be happy.
Okay, but so in a way you're saying what is, it doesn't matter as much as what was.
To an extent. I mean, if you're great to your kids all the time and then you do something wrong,
right.
It's easier for them to forgive. If you beat them every day, it really doesn't, you know,
right.
It's where you're at.
So, yeah, right. So that candy bar on a Sunday is not going to do you much,
yep.
If you beat them Monday through Friday.
So now you look at where's the culture. And the
Which
airlines are a real interesting aspect when you're looking at culture. So they've got to have the union culture, which he doesn't have as much control as you'd like.
Right.
And you got pilots, you got mechanics, you got flight attendants. Then you have the people who work in the office. It's not just the Sears Tower culture. And then you have the people that are the desk people. That's a lot of different groups of people to get.
And different audiences, right? Because his first response was to his employees.
Yep.
That was the audience there, and which was a little tone deaf because the rest of us heard it as well.
Well, and nothing, everything. Everything is public, nothing is private.
Right.
Right? And so what you say in a members-only group is not the same as what you'd say to the public.
Well, and I think they, if they didn't release that publicly, I think they knew full well it would be released publicly.
Yes.
It just was the wrong thing to do. All right, so to me, this is disturbing news for people running a company and trying to change the sort of culture or the view, because it's not going to happen just because they get the job.
No, it's not going to happen just because of that. And I also believe that this is a unique situation. The person didn't want to leave. Usually, no matter what your beliefs are, the police come and they look you in the eye. You get up and you get off.
Right.
I'm not saying the guy's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's normal course of action. And how somebody, it's delegation. And you're looking, this wasn't the CEO in the situation. It wasn't a VP in the situation. There's some accountability for the people that were actually
there.
Well,
in many ways, it wasn't even the United Airlines employees who were
right.
in the situation.
But
it
even if it were,
aviation.
This was a mid-level manager making a
decision. Okay, so they came out with the big yesterday, we're going to pay more, we're going to bump people, we're going to do all of this. Have they done enough, or what do they do?
No, that's public opinion. Now you'll have a situation where a flight's overbooked and someone's going, well, I'm just going to sit here until you offer me $10,000.
Right.
I mean, I don't think that was the right thing to do either.
Right.
Right? Would you get off now for $1,000 if they publicly said they'll pay you $10,000?
No, I would not, my friend. No, I would wait for $10,000.
Right?
Or $2,000.
So maybe it gets a little bit more, but your flight coming back where it was half empty, that's the problems. People forget 10 years ago that people thought the whole airline business was going to have to be taken over by the government because none of them can stay in business.
Right?
So there's a lot bigger issues, and one person on all, as my grandmother would have said, with all the people that fly, one guy's got a problem, and the whole thing, you're going to throw out the whole barrel for one bad apple?
The answer, I think, was yes. Tom Gimbel, the LaSalle Network. People follow you at?
At Tom Gimbel on Twitter, at LaSalle Network, and LaSalleNetwork.com.
See, we did that whole thing without talking about the Bears draft.
I'm fingers are crossed, and I'm optimistic.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. A little bit later in this half hour, we'll talk about the extension of Route 53 up through Lake County. There is a renewed push for that. I don't know if it's a renewed push or there's a constant push, a pushback. I'm not sure exactly where we are on that, but there's some new data on it. So we will kick that around a little bit later on the program. Right now, Mandy Antonacci is on a phone line. She writes about the business of sports for Inc.com and elsewhere and joins us from time to time. And Mandy, thanks for tearing yourself away from Philadelphia and the draft to talk to us today.
Hi, Steve. No problem. Thank you for having me.
So what do you think? Exciting so far? Not exciting? The draft is, to me, I just don't understand that people get so enthusiastic about it, because it's like watching, it's like reading the first chapter of a story that you won't finish for 5 years and jumping up and down about it.
That's a great way to think about it, actually. I think, you know, for some people who get, let's take your, especially, you know, it's in the city of brotherly love this year.
Right, right.
So let's pick on some Eagle fans. For them, a pipeline is what they look forward to, right? So Browns fans, same thing. Jets fans, same thing. For a lot of people where they have their marquee players and they're set, they're anxious for the season to start. But I think for some fans, for some of these other teams, the pipeline is really what they have to rally around these days.
The one of those other teams might be the Chicago Bears, and they drafted Mitch Trubisky, right, who soon will be a household name, not just here but everywhere. You wrote a piece at Inc.com about investing or how to handle this contract, right? So he'll be slotted. He's going to bring in a lot of money. He's going to be introduced up at Halas Hall a little bit later today. And I think the stereotype, whether it's from ballers or reality or whatever, is that these guys often lose all their money, or they're not very good when it comes to handling their money. Is there something to that stereotype, or is that just sort of the things of fiction?
No, it's very true. And I think that's another reason, you know, you hit the nail on the head, why people actually do rally around the draft, is because we are witnessing overnight success, right? It's truly the embodiment of the American dream. So a lot of people go from, you know, a bank account that maybe consists of shared rent and a Netflix account to all of a sudden having a seven-figure salary that's pouring in. So, and there is a lot of data that supports bankruptcy and financial troubles with professional athletes. I think it was in 2009, Sports Illustrated did a study of former NFL and NBA players. What that showed is that after only 2 years of retirement, 78% of NFL players were either broke or struggling financially. So it's a very real and a very serious problem, for sure.
And you can read more at that at Inc.com, the piece you wrote. But one of the pieces of advice I liked was that you should treat each contract as your last contract. Don't think that, you know, I'm going to make, you know, $40 million now and then $40 million 4 or 5 years from now. Consider the fact that this could be the only contract you have.
I love that piece of advice. I agree. That's my favorite. And this is a piece I interviewed Leland Faust, who is a financial expert to professional athletes and in the entertainment industry. He has 40 years of experience on this. And one of the things in the phrasing that he uses against that idea is that you have an option. You know, you want to live like a prince forever, not like a king for the length of your career and a pauper for the rest of your life. And if you apply that to the average career in the NFL, the span is really only 3 years. That's the average tenure in the NFL. So if you amortize that, your finances across that spectrum, this advice is so sound.
Isn't he the guy also who says, you know, look, if you're a typical Harvard business graduate and you make a couple hundred grand right out of school, you can live the good life. So why not try to live at that standard for a while and maintain your money?
Exactly. Great piece of advice. So he looks at some of these, you know, Harvard Business School graduates or people coming out from the top law schools or business schools. Let's say they're making a couple $100,000 a year. You look at them and they're living the good life, right? So his advice that he gives to professional athletes is at $400,000 a year, minimum salary or $2 million, how is that not enough? So take this Harvard Business School. He calls it a 2x Harvard Business School method for saving. Live the good life for $400,000, 2x the average salary of a Harvard Business School graduate, and bank the rest. You could have the good life just like them.
You know, we were just talking to Tom Gimbel from the LaSalle Network about corporate culture, too, and how different workers fit into one culture or another, how CEOs can manage their varying cultures. And I know one of the things you've written about is the fact that, you know, in a way, NFL executives do this as well, right? When it comes to who they're going to draft, it's not just how the biscuit can handle the biscuit, but it's about how he might fit in with the organization. They hire psychologists and things such as that.
This is such an important topic, Steve. And really, I feel that the leading character during the NFL draft is actually the word character. If you watch it or pay attention to it, it comes up so frequently these days. And exactly what you said, when you look at the culture of a business, that's the difficult thing that a lot of fans, when they're looking at the NFL or paying attention to the draft, they don't look at it as a business. But if you're a team owner and you're a coach, this is strictly a business decision, and it's a simple risk versus reward. And too many players are spending the season on the sidelines, large in part because of legal troubles. So the teams hire psychologists to perform tests and analyze tests that give the owners and give the coaches a psychological profile of all of their draft picks, all of their prospective draft picks.
So we've talked about the big money and how to handle the big money. We've talked about the psychology of it. Tell me about the psychology of a kid who has a chance for a big, fat signing bonus and instead bypasses the NFL draft and goes into rugby. What's that about?
Is that amazing? Is that amazing or what? So you and I, Steve, have talked about the growth of rugby and how it is the fastest growing team sport in the United States today. And this is really a testament to that. His name is Saul Mooching. He was a draft prospect for the NFL coming out of University of Washington. And he had phone calls from teams all the way up until Wednesday this week. And he basically said, no, thank you. And he is pursuing his dream, which is not the perceived American dream to play for the NFL. But his dream is to be a pro rugby player. And that is exactly what he's doing.
And we'll see when will he find out about that? Mandy, you've tried to school me. Listen, I was in Dublin just yesterday, and the hotel we stayed at was just in the shadow of the Aviva Stadium there, the rugby stadium in Dublin. But school me on this. So when does he become, or how would he become, or what's the future when it comes to being a professional rugby player in the U.S.?
Yeah, he's actually playing right now, and he will probably play overseas. So he's in a lot of conversations to be drafted overseas first. But he's in a league right now. He's doing a lot of playing, and he's doing a lot of traveling. He was just in Ireland as well. Now he's back in the States. But the interesting thing about him, imagine this. Now, this is a D1 athlete, a starter on the team. He was actually playing during the off season. He was playing spring football, get changed, take off his uniform in the locker room, and sprint over to the other side of the quad on campus, and he would play in their rugby league.
Wow. All right, well, best of luck to him. Mandy, thanks for taking time to join us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much for having me. Have a great weekend.
We'll talk again soon. That's Mandy Antonacci. You can read more of what she writes at Inc.com or follow her on Twitter as well. That's what I do. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WG, and thanks very much for that. Steve Bertrand back in the chair today after taking some time off, taking a group of WGN listeners out to Ireland. So great time there, but great to be back here as well. Mary Craighead is on a phone line. She's a policy analyst at the Illinois Economic Policy Institute, and they looked recently at the extension of Route 53. Mary, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with a little description of this Illinois Economic Policy Institute, because I'm not sure I know you guys. Who are you?
Well, we are a nonprofit research organization, and so basically we release reports and perform research and analyses of policies and projects that would affect the economies of Illinois and the Midwest.
I know you've got a friend of mine, Dave Sullivan, on your board, former state senator.
Yes, sir.
Republican. I see Democrats on the board as well. So, I just want to go into this knowing what we can. Are you guys, do you tend to be partisan one way or another?
No, we don't really deal with politics. We're dealing with policies, and, we look at the policies and the best policies that would be the best for Illinois and the Midwest. So, yeah, not looking to be partisan.
All right. So you looked recently at this extension of Route 53 up into Lake County. Now, I live not too far from Lake Hook Road, so we go out sometimes, get on 53 and head south. That's where it kind of starts or ends. And it seems like forever there's been this talk about extending it up all the way, I think, to Gray's Lake. It seems almost to be like a perpetual argument and something that will never be done. You guys have looked at it and you think it's something that should be done. Tell me why that is.
Yeah, we definitely think it should be done. And kind of the two main reasons we're looking at is congestion issues and also its economic impact and the positive impact it could have on Lake County. So our study really considered the inclusive planning process that's been going on in the last few years here. We also were looking at some other factors that impact transportation. So we were looking at population growth in the future, traffic volumes, commuting patterns, and then finally looked at the economic impact. Ultimately, like I said, the project is going to significantly reduce congestion, and it's going to create jobs, and it's going to save people time traveling. All great reasons to move the project forward.
More than half of Lake County's residents work outside the county?
Yes. Well, yeah, it's very significant. So more than half the residents, and then also there's a significant percentage of people commuting into Lake County for their jobs from Cook County. So you see there's those strong north-south movements traveling through the area where this road could be a benefit.
You got to figure that those people in Lake County aren't driving east to go to work. I don't know how many would be driving into Wisconsin to go to work, maybe into McHenry County, but most of them would be driving south into Cook County, and that's the sort of thing that an expanded sort of extended Route 53 could help with. I know PIRG, right? U.S. PIRG put this sort of extension on one of their lists of bad ideas, that this would be just more government spending, kind of a boondoggle. They don't think that this is a good investment for taxpayer dollars. How do you respond to them?
Well, you know, I can't speak directly to their report, but, you know, I think we're looking at the facts here and the reality of congestion in Lake County currently. And, you know, so we're looking at it and seeing what the congestion reduction could be. It's really significant. And we're also looking at how it can create jobs and support the economy of Lake County. So all these things are positive things, making it a worthwhile project.
I think opponents as well would say, look, you know, the suburban sprawl just continues. This would do that. I mean, it would probably bring businesses up and along Route 53 on either side of it. But you know, they would do it at a cost to losing farmland, losing green space and things like that. You think that's a trade-off that would be worth it?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you have to consider with sprawl is that, yeah, you have to consider projects that could contribute to it. But this one in particular is addressing a major transportation issue that is in Lake County right now. And it's the way that it has been studied, which it was included in CMAP, the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, their long-range regional plan, and they were specifically able to give some details of what the reduction of congestion would be. And this project, they ranked it as not only the highest, the ability to have the highest reduction in congestion, but not only that, it provides three times that of the congestion reduction of the second best project. So, like, if you get a picture of how much this reduction is going to be, I think there's a huge impact, and, you know, it's something that's needed in Lake County.
You know, I think you can see it, Mary, again, where I live in the eastern part of the county, but on just the east-west roads, whether it's Half Day or Lake Cook, when it comes to the afternoon drive, they are completely clogged, and I can only assume that's from people coming up on the tri-state or 41 and then driving west because they don't have a chance to take Route 53. Mary Craighead is a transportation policy analyst at the Illinois Economic Policy Institute. Next time you see Dave Sullivan, tell him I said hello, will you?
I will. Thank you.
Nice to talk with you.